The Dugout CEO podcast is on the air. I'm Phil Van Horn, baseball lifer and fan of the Dugout CEO. Each week, Casey Cavell goes around the horn with baseball superstars, Hall of Fame coaches, and business leaders who've used baseball experience to win the game of life. Now batting, Casey Cavell.
Dugout Nation, welcome to the Dugout CEO podcast today. I am joined by Jacob Turner, who is a founder of Moment Private Wealth, and he helps entrepreneurs and athletes build and protect their wealth. His passions are people, sports, and finance. And after being drafted in the first round of the 2009 MLB draft, he spent the next decade playing for five MLB teams. You are in for a treat today, learning from somebody that truly knows how to win both on and off the field. Jacob, welcome to the Dugout CEO.
Casey, I appreciate you having me. Really looking forward to the conversation today.
Yeah, likewise. So you've been doing a lot of really cool things in the wealth management space, helping athletes and entrepreneurs build and protect their wealth. And we're going to talk about all that here in a few. But first, I want to talk about that phone call that you got that all of us that play amateur sports wants to get, especially me as a baseball player. So talk to me a little bit about June 2009, what kind of led up to that moment, and tell us your story.
So 2009, I got drafted by the Detroit Tigers, and people see that now and they think like, oh man, what a cool time. And look, it was an amazing time. But the reality was, it was also really stressful at the time because I didn't know that I was going to get picked by them. I had a really good senior year of high school, but the way the draft works with baseball is just because you have the ability to get drafted really high doesn't mean you're always going to. Really, the talent level has to match with whatever the team is willing to value you at or potentially pay you at. So for me going into the draft, I was told by a lot of teams like they weren't going to pick me. They didn't feel like the number that I potentially wanted to sign for was something that they were going to be willing to meet. So I had full expectation that I was going to be going to North Carolina. But as an 18-year-old and as somebody that always wanted to play professional baseball, it was one of the first years the draft was televised. So I can remember watching the draft and still feeling like, man, it would be really cool to see my name picked, especially when you see guys that you've played with for the past 5 years at the competitive level, whether that be Team USA or other showcase events, starting to get drafted. So I got drafted 9th overall, but I'll tell you, Casey, the first 8 picks felt like they took forever to go by. And I'll never forget Bud Selig, who was the commissioner at the time, read off my name, I got picked, and I just ran over across the room. I gave my dad a big hug, and I just said that we did it, because it was really such a wee moment where I had gotten there through all the work that my brothers had done with me, my mom and dad had done with me, the tournaments that they took me to. So it was one of the cooler experiences I've ever had in professional sports.
Leading up to that moment, what do you think we did right? Your team, your parents, those that surrounded you to get you to that point. Like, what were the things that said, you know what, I think this is one of the reasons why I did make it?
Well, I think first and foremost, they kept me grounded, and they never let me think that I was probably as good as I really was. I think that really helped me. I saw a lot of kids that I played with that their parents would constantly pump them up about how great they were. And honestly, my parents, they didn't push us down, but they never, it was always like, okay, that was great. You had a great game. We won the tournament that weekend, but like, what are we going to do next week to try to get better? I'll never forget my dad. He was a competitive tennis player growing up, but he would always use this analogy of like this window analogy that at any point in your life, if you want to do something, when the window's open, you have this ability to do it. But once they close that window on you, you can't really go back through the window. And for whatever reason, that always resonated with me, because with professional sports, and especially becoming a professional athlete at 18, it took a ton of hard work from the time I was, let's call it 14 to 18. And the only reason why I didn't burn out doing a lot of that work was because I wanted to do the work. My parents never pushed us to do the work. They encouraged us and they gave us the optionality that if we wanted to do it, they would help support us in that. So when you ask what went right, I think a lot of it came from the foundational level of what my parents gave me.
And as an 18-year-old, okay, the call comes in, you run across the room, you give them a hug. Like, what happened next? Were you prepared for what happened next? And I guess talk to us through that next journey.
I think I was as prepared as you could possibly be as an 18-year-old outside of somebody like a Jackson Holliday, who's Matt Holliday's son. Because I had people in my life that had played professional sports. Mike Matheny, Andy Bennis had been longtime big leaguers and then had been family friends at that point for a few years. So I was able to get a sense from them of what pro baseball looked like specifically. But what I will say is that it's still a culture shock. I mean, I went from a high school that had 110 kids roughly in my graduating class to professional sports a week later, where I was playing against 30-year-old grown men, and they're looking at me as like this 18-year-old kid who signed for all this money. You kind of have a target on your back. So there was a lot of culture shock that went into it for sure.
The culture shock, what was that shock? What was that moment where you were just like, oh my gosh, can I even do this? Or was there that moment?
I can remember just being even like in the dorms at the complex when I first got there. We'd stayed in dorms that the Tigers had, and just experiencing like living away from home and seeing all my friends that had gone away to college and seeing all the fun that it looked like that they were having. It was cool to sign, but I can remember there was one night where I was sitting there and I was like, I wonder what it'd be like if I was at North Carolina right now, which is where I'd committed to go to school. Because I missed out on a lot of that college experience that everybody gets from 18 to 22.
What do you think those things were that the average, you know, 18 to 22-year-old gets in experience that you might have missed out on jumping straight into professional sports?
Well, first and foremost, I think there's just a lot of fun things that happen in college at that time of your life. And really, I went into a situation where it was much more of a business. Professional sports is a business. And if, don't get it mistaken, like if they sign you for a lot of money, they're expecting you to perform and they can be your friend. But at the end of the day, they're your friend when you're performing, and they're not going to be your friend when you're not performing, because, you know, they're on the line too. They chose you. They picked you high. They paid you a lot of money. They're expecting you to perform. And it really made me grow up fast, which has ultimately really benefited me in my life. But at the same time, there were things that I was experiencing just at a rapid pace that I probably wouldn't have had that level of acceleration if I would have been in college.
You're right, because you're a number, right? They assigned a number to you. You know, millions of dollars they invested in you, and they expected you to get that return. How did you deal with that pressure of performance? Because that is a hard thing to jump into. And I think now more than ever, this world is putting pressure on athletes or employees or whoever it is to perform. How do you handle that tension? How do you balance that pressure versus, hey, you know what, I'm just a 19-year-old, or I'm a 29-year-old, or a 49-year-old, and I'm in the career space now, but I'm just trying to enjoy each moment versus being forced to perform 40 hours a week?
I think it's really important, Casey, that people understand that pressure is really an internal thing that you put on yourself. Oftentimes, the pressure that we feel from the outside really isn't as great as it is, because the reality is most people aren't thinking about you. Most people are thinking about themselves. So that's first and foremost. And two, the thing that's always helped me is building a routine around things that I can control. So what are the things in my daily life that I can control, whether that is when I was a professional athlete or as an entrepreneur? And I can focus on those things, because I know if I do those things over a really long period of time, I'm going to have success. I think that starts to eliminate some of the pressure that you feel. But, you know, I can remember this great quote. I think it was from Roy Halladay, who used to be a great pitcher, was really in his prime as I was coming up and becoming a professional athlete. And he talked about how basically, like, I don't feel a ton of pressure when I go out there because I know I've put in all the work. And I think it's almost as simple as that sometimes.
Yeah, I'm thinking about this podcast. I woke up early this morning and I wasn't myself. And my wife's like, what's going on? I go, I'm not prepared for my show today. And she goes, well, why aren't you prepared? I go, I didn't do it yesterday. And I was nervous because I wasn't prepared. Now I got my hour in, I prepped for this show, and here I am. And hopefully we're doing a good job so far, because you're right. It's like, if you are prepared, like, what do you have to lose? That's all you can control anyway, is how you're stepping to the plate or how you're getting to the mound. So how have you been able to take what you've learned in baseball and use that as you build a business? What are those things that baseball has taught you, how to build a business and how to build a life?
I think the first thing I always go back to is resiliency. Sports in general just teaches you how to be resilient, especially baseball. Baseball is a game of failure, and it really teaches you that what are the things that I need to do whenever I get knocked down, or what are the things that I need to do to make sure that I stay even keeled when I do have those big successes? Because the reality is, we're all going to have successes and failures in our lives. And ultimately, the deciding factor is going to be how quickly do we respond to the times when we get knocked down? And then also, how do we respond when things are going really positively, where we really keep going, we really keep pushing forward?
You know, not a lot of people have figured out how to handle failure, but also almost not how to handle success. And it's interesting because they talk more about failure than how to handle success. And you obviously had a whole lot of that. Did you find people that you played with that they didn't know how to handle failure or success? And then I guess, what did you learn throughout that process?
Well, I think oftentimes history is our best teacher. So even specific examples, you know, if we look at like Johnny Manziel with football, right? You said, like, what is an example of somebody not being able to handle success in the moment that he was having it? He was one of the most successful college football players out there, but he let a lot of the success that he was having on the field go to things that were happening off the field, which then in turn started spiraling downhill. And then it ultimately led to his decline on the field. And then on the flip side of that, if you look at folks that have failed and haven't really come back from that failure, there's a litany of those people. And the reality is that's one of the hardest things to do because you have scars. And one example I would give of somebody that failed, it took them a while to come back from it, but now they've really come back to form, is Jordan Spieth. So Jordan Spieth is one of the best golfers in the world. At the time, he was the number one golfer. He had won a couple majors in a row. He then goes to the Masters and he kind of blows it on Sunday. Like, he had a chance to win. He doesn't win. And it was this kind of precipitous decline for him. And it took him a year or two to really get back into form because he kind of had these scars of, okay, I failed for the first time ever on this big stage. How do I want to react to that? How do I react to that? What steps do I potentially need to take to get back to my elite level form? So I think, you know, Casey, athletes are great people that we can look to in terms of how do we respond to failure? And then also, how do we respond to success?
We've talked a little bit about your career. What was it in your career that told you, you know what, after I get done, I want to get into the wealth management business? Was there something that happened to you, or tell us that story?
I just love financial advisors so much my whole life. No, I'm kidding. You know, I love personal finance, Casey, and I signed at 18 years old. I was blessed to sign for millions of dollars. And my mom, who had an accounting background, I remember she told me, she was like, you know, Jacob, we'll help you build the team of people around you, but ultimately it's your responsibility. And it kind of reminds me of that movie line from Spider-Man where he talks about how with, you know, great responsibility or whatever it is. And for me, I've always loved personal finance and learning. So throughout my baseball career, I was always the person that was reading personal finance books or asking guys questions about what they were doing with their money. So I knew when I got done playing, I wanted to do something around educating people around personal finance, specifically athletes, but I wasn't sure what that route was going to be. And ultimately, it's led to, you know, a business that we started 2.5 years ago, helping athletes and entrepreneurs manage and protect their wealth. And it's been an incredibly fun journey.
People that come into money, let's first talk to those, and then let's then talk to the audience that, you know, they haven't inherited a bunch of money, or they're not an entrepreneur, they haven't sold a business. What is money? What advice would you have to, you know, your typical person listening to this? They're a coach, they're a teacher, they're on a salary, but they are kind of living, you know, month to month kind of thing. What advice would you have for them, or simple concepts or principles that you teach that could help them maybe get ahead of the game?
Well, first and foremost, I think people need to understand that one of the most important things that, and I think a lot of financial people don't really talk about this, is increasing your skill set, because increasing your skill set allows you to increase your potential earning power, which then allows you to start creating that gap between what you're earning and what you're spending. And then once you start doing that, you can obviously start saving money, you can start investing money, and you can really see your wealth grow over time. But I think oftentimes we miss that very first step, which is, what skills do I need to build to potentially have an opportunity to earn, increase my income in the future?
It's interesting. I was just talking to interviewed Chuck Box. He's Texas A&M, heads up their athletic development. And, you know, he's working on some other things to potentially take to market to help, you know, coaches and athletes, because he's kind of like, hey, I have an entrepreneurial bug. I want to make an impact, but what does that look like? And he said he's been researching for 2 or 3 years of what is his skill and his gift set, and how does he turn that into adding value to others, and then potentially generating revenue from that. Because, you know, as a school teacher or a coach or an employee, there's only so much income you can make, but more skill set, more income, more opportunity. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. It all flows from one to the other. We talk about compounding a lot when it comes to investing, but there's a lot of compounding too, just in life, when it comes to skill building and then ultimately wealth building at the end of that. But you have to start at the first part of that, and that's really that skill building aspect.
So how does somebody do that? I'm trying to put myself into the shoes. Somebody listening to this, they could be a 40-year-old. They got some young kids, right? They're married. They own a house. They got a job, right? They're low on time. They're low on energy. They want more, but time is of the essence. Like, how does somebody even go to block out time to get better at whatever it is they do or learn something new?
Well, I think the first step is, on Sunday, if you have an iPhone, your iPhone is going to tell you how long you've looked at your iPhone every single day. I think the average person looks at their iPhone like 3 hours a day or more. So that's 21 hours during the week. So I think step one is like, stop looking at your phone and start doing more things. Okay. Because the reality is I always hear people say like, oh, I don't have time to do that. And look, I know time is limited, but we have time to do things that are important to us. So making that a important thing in your life, I think is step one. Step two, I think, is whatever aspect or whatever area of life you're in, looking towards people that you look up to, from whether it's a financial perspective or a relational perspective or from a business perspective, and saying like, what skills do they have that maybe I don't have today, that maybe I'm lacking, that I could increase to try to get closer and close the gap between myself and them. And that is different for everybody in every industry. But the one thing that you can do is you can be curious and you can ask them questions. And you'd be shocked how many people are ultra successful that if you just ask them this simple question, would you mind sharing like how you got to where you're at today? They would love to tell you. People love to talk about themselves. And the reality is oftentimes a lot of the most successful people that are in your life, they've never been asked that question. They've never been interviewed, so to speak. And they really would love to be able to share the knowledge that they have in terms of how they got to where they're at on the journey.
Every time I get a DM or a message or something like that, and it's sincere, I always try to make time, because I had people in my life and I wasn't scared to ask other people for help. And I think that is maybe one of the things that do hold people back. They're just scared to ask for help, or they're scared to say, I don't know it all, or whatever. So I think that's really good. So let's say you've learned skills, or you've built a business, or you have some disposable income, or you got that signing bonus money. What do you do with it? How do you manage it? How do you build it? How do you protect it? What do you like to teach?
I think step one is just getting educated, Casey, getting educated on what are the options that are out there for you, because money is inherently personal. One of the biggest mistakes I see people make is they see what somebody else is doing with money, and they think that because this person's doing it, maybe they're wealthy, I should be doing it. And I think that's the wrong way to think about it. Now, certainly there's tactics and strategies that can apply to many different people across the board. But step one is getting educated on what is important to you. Like, where are you trying to go with this money? What is it trying to accomplish in your life? And I'll use myself as an example. My goal with money is to create freedom of time. It's to create freedom of choice, where I can go out in the day and I can say, hey, what are the things that I most enjoy doing? And I can go ahead and tackle those things. But in order to get to that point, it's also led to me turning down a lot of materialistic things that maybe I could have bought early in my baseball career. I could have bought a nicer car. I said, you know what? That's not really my angle. That's not what I want. I could have bought a really nice watch. And so my dad told me that my phone tells time the exact same way as watches. So I think it's really important to understand, like, what are you trying to accomplish with the money that you have?
And is that a process you take your clients through? Because I know the business that you've built, super impressive. And by the way, follow Jacob. We'll link his Twitter. We got connected initially on Twitter and we have a bunch of mutual conversations, but you're producing all kinds of good content. Is that and stuff that you teach, or I guess, what is your process, or what could you give us some takeaways from this to kind of help us with the money component of our lives?
What we do with clients when they initially come on board is we really try to drill down and understand that exact point of like, where are we trying to go? So the way that I describe it, Casey, is for everybody listening, you want to start with the end in mind. Every good decision I've made in my life has started with the end in mind. What I mean by that is, what are the things that 5, 10, 15 years out in the future, I want them to look like? And then let's backtrack and say, okay, if we want it to look like this life in the future, what steps do we need to take next month, in next week, and tomorrow to potentially get there in 5 or 10 or 15 years. So I think step one for anybody listening that everybody can do is look out a little bit in the future and say, like, where do I want to go? Because time is valuable and time goes by so fast. And I know for me with 4 kids, it can feel like these weeks just fly by. And you look up and you're like, man, it's December or it's January. And I'm trying to figure out like, when I can come up for air. But oftentimes we need to come up for air and zoom out a little bit and say, where am I trying to go? And is all this work that I'm putting in Monday through Friday and even on the weekends really getting me to where I want to go? Or is it just kind of keeping me where I'm at?
And I think it's so hard to figure out the answers to those questions because we're so busy doing, we're so busy providing, we're so busy taking action where we almost need to slow down. You know, I keep thinking, and I always like to talk about this, the Pareto's principle, the 20-80, 20% of your time produces 80% of your result. I mean, look at baseball. I think probably 80% of your RBIs come from the 3, 4, and 5 hole hitters, right? So in business and activity, you spend 10 hours working, only 2 hours of that's really producing a result. And I think we're just so busy doing stuff and probably on the phone and all that kind of stuff that we're not really taking time to think and then prioritize and then take action. So I think I'm getting really challenged by that, like slow down, think more, do less stuff, and then focus on doing the stuff that really matters.
One thing that was such an epiphany for me when I first got into entrepreneurship was it was a struggle. I had a lot of this white space is what I would call it, where, you know, you wake up and you really have the optionality to do kind of whatever you want to do, but what is most important? And for a while, I would do a bunch of things that would make me feel busy. So then at the end of the day, I could say, you know what, I was really busy today. But the reality was, just because I was busy didn't really mean I was moving the ball forward. And much like you said there, Casey, I think it's figuring out what are the things that are my highest and best use, where like I can really drive the ball forward and focusing on those things. I think we've been told as a society, like you need to work what's called 9 to 5 to be productive. And that is a barometer of how good your day was. But the reality is, that's not a barometer of how good your day was. It's what you actually focus on that moved the ball down the field. And that might be, like you said, that might be 2 hours of your day. And you're like, you know, if I accomplish this one thing today, I know that it's going to be a really successful day.
Just last night, I just pulled out the text message. I'm working on a new startup, and I sent out a bunch of documents over to my advisor, and he goes, I'm reading it right now. He goes, you're on a roll. I've got some catching up to do. And I responded back, moving fast, just not sure if in the right direction, with a little bit of a winky face. So like, I'm now wise enough to know what you just said is true. Like, moving fast, doing things doesn't necessarily mean I'm doing the right things, but I have him in my life where I'm like, hey, am I going in the right direction? Am I doing the right things? So I think that's just so smart to have those people around you. And then who do you surround yourself with now? You're building a business, right? You got 4 kids, right? You're trying to build something that really makes an impact. Who's on your team now that's kind of helping you be holistically healthy?
Well, first and foremost, I think about my wife. I think every great entrepreneur out there, every great athlete that I know has a spouse on the backside of that that's helping to support them. Because the reality is, oftentimes that journey, whether it's as an athlete or an entrepreneur, can often be pretty lonely. So having somebody there that you can talk to and have real open, honest, raw conversations with. The second person I would say is my brother. You know, my brother's my business partner. And I'm so thankful that I have him as my business partner, because there's such a level of trust there that we have with each other. We've done life together our entire lives, and it's incredibly fun to build things with people that you love. And then on top of that, Casey, you know, I have people in my life that I would just call them mentors, where I can go to them with questions, where they're 5, 10, 15 years down the road from me. And by asking them questions, by being curious, like we talked about before, I can hopefully help shortcut the path that I want to get to based on a lot of their experiences.
I want to, you know, invite our listeners to learn more about you and what you do. So obviously you're on Twitter. Are we calling it X these days, or what are we doing? Have we made the change?
I don't know, man. I was texting somebody last night and I said Twitter, and I was like, it just feels weird saying X. They're going to wonder what I'm talking about.
I know. And I think we'll eventually get there. So one, we're going to make sure we link all of that in the show notes, but who are you helping one more time? Who should go check you out, contact you, and then how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, so our company is Moment Private Wealth. We work specifically with professional athletes and high growth entrepreneurs. So we're helping people that have the ability to come into a lot of money in a really short time frame, and they really want expert advice. They want people that have walked in their shoes to help guide them to build and protect wealth. So our website is momentprivatewealth.com. Like Casey mentioned, I'm also really active on social media. You can find me on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and LinkedIn under The Jacob Turner. On Instagram, I think there's an underscore there, but would love to connect with you if you feel like we might be able to help or just have a conversation.
Cool. All right. Give me 3 strikes and you're out. What are 3 things that people do today with their money they should probably stop doing? What do you think? Number one, or maybe it's a myth or something that people believe in about money that they need to just like stop believing in. I have one that I learned from you a couple of weeks ago. I kind of knew it, but I learned it from X. So I wanted to see what else you come up with. And then I want to share that one with you.
Let me preface this by saying my compliance guy would tell me that this is hashtag not financial advice. But one thing that I think people miss oftentimes is we spend money on things that other people care about and not things that we care about. We're heading up on the holidays, we're heading into the new year, and you're going to see all these people spend money on all these things that they care about. But focus on what you care about. And two, kind of in connection with that, If you're thinking about buying something that's really cool, whether it's a watch, a car, a new house, a new pair of clothes, a new pair of shoes, think about it like this. If nobody ever saw you with whatever the thing you're going to buy is, would you still buy it? And I think that's a really good framing that I've kind of made decisions off of in terms of spending. And then really the third thing, and Casey, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but what are ways that you can build your skill set? The best decisions I've ever made have been things that I've paid money to help build my skill set, because that has 10x'd what my potential wealth creation looks like in the future.
I love it, because I feel like I'm doing a pretty good job on that first one. A couple of those I need to learn on, so I'm going to marinate on that. But for Christmas, we've done like, need, and read for our kids. Like, they're going to get something they like they kind of want to have, something they need to have, and then something they're going to read, which I thought is good. And then I kind of told my wife, I'm like, 3 presents. I'm like, I got probably 15 when I was a little kid. So I'm trying to figure out a way to, you know, blend my needs and wants with hers. And I think that's really cool. And I think you mentioned it, behind every great entrepreneur leader, you know, is a spouse. And not all of us are in great marriages, or we might not be married or whatever. But I do think that cheerleader, what does that look like, I think is really key. And then taking care of that person, because just as much as you, Jacob, need encouragement from her, she needs it from us. And I think one of the things that I see a lot of really good leaders do is take care of the significant others that are around them. So I think that's really cool. I read this the other day, you posted that a house is like not a good investment. Did I read that right?
I think there's this misconception in America where we think that like buying a house is the American dream, right? You've heard that a million times, and that the best way to create wealth is to buy a home. And what I like to tell people is, while buying a house is not an inherently bad thing, my wife and I own a house, understand what the costs are to actually own that house. Because I see all these people say, well, I made so much money on my house, and I think that's great if they did. But the reality is there's also a lot of costs that come with home ownership. So in that post that you're talking about, Casey, I broke down kind of what my own personal costs are. And really what I was getting at was, my house is worth $250,000 more today than when I bought it. But the reality is, when I go to sell it, I'm actually probably not going to really make any money on it, because of money we've put into the house to keep it up, the cost of selling the house, the time value of the money if that was in the house versus it was invested in other things. So the goal there is that people understand that there's also fixed costs, but there's recurring costs sometimes with owning a home.
Yeah, and I'm looking back at us, and we just sold a house and bought a new house, and I think we got a return our investment, but we had a place that we enjoyed being. And I think money in general, like, that's what it's supposed to do. You're supposed to have it, use it, enjoy it, not be a master of it. And you do a fantastic job of educating people, Jacob, of money, how it could be used, how it should be used. And I think just what you said earlier about increasing your skills was just super impactful. So one, thank you for being here and being a guest and sharing this knowledge and wisdom. And it's not every day we have somebody that has had a journey like yours. So I want to go back and kind of summarize this and marinate it on it, because so many good takeaways here. So anything else you want to leave our listeners with before you jump off?
No, I think, you know, Casey, I love the work that you're doing with this podcast. I love the message that you're putting out there, and I think more people need to hear it. So keep up the great work, and look forward to what you're doing as we head towards the new year.
Yeah, thanks, Jacob. Well, Moment Private Wealth, check it out. Jacob's a great follow on X, all kinds of free information. And if you're an athlete, entrepreneur, really check out what they're doing. They're doing things the right way. So, Jacob, thank you so much for being a guest on the Dugout CEO.
Thanks for having me, Casey.
Dugout Nation, what an amazing time with Jacob. What a wealth of information. Number one, surround yourself with the right team. Advisors, coaches, mentors. No doubt the success that you have in life will be a result of the people you surround yourself with. Smart people don't only learn from their mistakes, but they learn from the mistakes of others. Number two, don't be concerned about what others want for you. Focus on what you want. Paint the picture of your life and what you want to accomplish, whether it's on the field or in the boardroom or at home. What do you want to accomplish? Who do you want to become? Stay focused on that. Share those goals with others. Don't get distracted and make it happen. And improving your skills, it's a shortcut to long-term success. Figure out what you're good at. Maximize those skills. Learn new skills. And figure out a way to turn those skills into empowering and helping others become successful. Thank you for joining us once more for another episode of The Dugout CEO. We want to get you the tips you need to become an MVP at what you do. Sign up for our Friday Focus newsletter and you'll receive a valuable tip each Friday morning to help you build the business and life you want. You can sign up by going to caseycavell.com or click the link in the show notes. And make sure to hit the subscribe button so you get notification on our next episode. And one way you can help us book more great guests like this is to please leave us a rating and honest review in the Apple or Spotify podcasting app.